Edric is one boy. He may be the best boy who ever drew breath, and it would not matter. My duty is to the realm. He swept his hand across the painted table. How many boys dwell in Westeros? How many girls? How many men? How many women? The darkness will devour them all, she says. The night that never ends. She talks of prophecies. A hero reborn in the sea. Living dragons hatched from dead stone. She speaks of signs and swears they point to me. I never asked for this. No more than I asked to be king. Yet dare I disregard her? He ground his teeth. We do not choose our destinies, yet we must. We must do our duty, no? Great or small, we must do our duty.
Welcome to the White Book Podcast, the original A Game of Thrones LCG podcast. Founded in 2010 as Two Champs and a Chump, we thought it best to rename and rebrand ourselves freshly just in time for the game to do the same with its second edition. Tune in each episode for your dose of strategy, discussion, jokes, and good old geek culture. A huge thank you goes out to George R.R. Martin, Fantasy Flight Games, Card Game DB, and you, our loyal and new listeners. Check us out at www.whitebookpodcast.com and contact us on Facebook and Twitter, or email us at contact@whitebookpodcast.com. This CC licensed music is Townfish by Spinozar.
He said he's just doing burning his daughter.
As far as I know, he doesn't do that in books. So
yet,
we've already talked about this. Martin told them, they're like, "Oh, that's brutal. Let's do it."
I don't know about that, but
it is in the shitty. Let's talk about our episode. Like, you're an idiot and a 5-year-old segment they do after the episode. Like, Martin told us about this moment, and we were like, "Oh, that's so metal."
If anybody ever gets to say something is so metal, it probably isn't, but whatever. Welcome to episode 220 of The White Book, and it is so metal.
So metal. You
should have let Tommy say that. He's got the voice for it.
Yeah, you do.
It is so metal.
That was good. Now I suddenly want to go to a monster truck rally.
Do you?
Sunday, monster truck rally. You're in the right Bill Lenz's house.
Kyle has recently seen it. There is no way we fit a monster truck in here.
I think we can fit a monster truck in there.
Well, here we go. We have a full crew this week. Of course, myself, Will, as well as my co-hosts returning.
Monster Truck Tommy.
I can't top that. That was too good.
Yeah. I'm Aaron. I've got nothing clever.
And I won on Saturday, so I don't need a fucking name.
Come back.
Chris Kaiser, is that you?
Oh, here. Ooh.
So what did you win there, Kyle?
What?
What did you win? Give us the quick layman's version of Kaiser Khan.
So Kaiser Khan is Chris Kaiser deciding he has too much booze and too much money and not enough friends. So we all flock to Oklahoma and get really trashed on some of the best beer I've ever had. And then we binge for a whole day playing Thrones. And we get out really sweet swag. It reminds me a lot of Wayne. I don't know what it is about, like, the bumfuck plains of this country being where the best tournaments are for getting cool prizes and drinking like champions, but
also
it is.
The only times Kyle wins.
Hey now!
Is this not the third tournament that the Stark Wings has won for you, Kyle?
It is. This is the Triple Crown.
So, shut up, Aaron.
Yeah. I'd like to say fuck you to everyone who talks about my silly deck not being good. Kaiser called it boring, and then I made him surrender it at the 5-minute mark, and I literally thought to myself, how boring is it now, Chris? How boring is it now? That was pretty awesome, though. I did make him surrender at 5 minutes. I wiped all of his locations and characters twice.
He blames it on being drunk, in fairness.
That's pretty fast.
He was not drunk. He had just gotten done soberly winning the second edition Joust. We played first round. He'd have one beer. One beer.
Apparently he's a lightweight. I don't know. What do you want from me?
Nothing. Kaiser can make all the excuses he wants. I crushed him. Crushed him
real
bad.
Can we get
bad.
Him on the show to validate his lightweight status? Because I don't buy that.
He swears he wants to come on.
Yeah, we'll need to do that.
The entire Tulsa crew is a big fan of this podcast. I got many compliments on the bullshit we put out each week.
Well, you've heard it here. Chris Kaiser coming on the show soon. Stay tuned. Yeah.
And talk about how boring my deck is.
My deck won 2.0.
Yeah, yeah.
Damn. So our podcast had a good KaiserCon.
It did. That was good. And then Matt Phillips won the Melee, second edition Melee, which was fun to see done competitively for the first time.
Second
the whole week
Melee is so good.
Second edition competitive play was very cool. But
well,
yeah,
you said the titles were a lot more fun this way, right?
Yes. Yes, yes, yes. And there's more negotiating with it. Like, they're better bargaining chips than previously done.
I really want to hear from someone who hated Melee.
Who what?
Who hated Melee in 1.0
like
I did. Like
a 1.0 hater?
Yeah, like
that's
me.
That's played 2.0?
Yeah, that's played 2.0 Melee to see how it holds up.
The catch is maybe getting them to try right. it at all.
Well, I'm going
to
try it.
Can we get Rings drunk enough?
Yeah, can we get Rings on the cast to do like a live casting of a Melee game?
Oh my. I don't know about that.
Breaking history.
Oh. There may not be enough booze in Nebraska to get him to play Melee.
Hey, I'll call that shot now. I'll Babe Ruth it. Next April, during WillyCon, I will record something that resembles Matthew Lay playing Melee.
Wow, that's another stay tuned for the listeners. We've got Chris Kaiser and then a potential Matt Lay Melee.
Low Melee. But yeah, so that was good. I liked winning. Winning is great. I have a sweet-ass playmat. It's on our Facebook page. Yeah, but Kaiser's did all his own design price support. I'm with some local help. Printed up playmats for all three champions. Promo cards, house cards, all you name it. So it was a good time. A really good time. I'd highly recommend it for all you people who live in Springfield, like 2 hours away, and didn't make the trip.
It was an awkward weekend because we had some other stuff lined up.
I'm trying to go next year, but we'll see.
Oh, I heard the rumor was Sandy was up until the last minute planning on making an appearance, which would have made the week reckless.
We got drunk. I know, shocking. But, like, we were drinking, and I was like, oh, man, KaiserCon is coming because Kaiser was talking to me. And he was like, shit, when is that? I should go. And he looked up plane tickets. He was like, I'm not going to buy these drunk. And then he just never bought them.
Aww. So the lesson there is always buy the plane tickets, even when you're drunk.
Especially when you're drunk.
Especially. That's when you get the best deals, or at least you think you are.
They were really expensive for no reason.
We were really planning on going. I got stuck in North Carolina on business, though, so we weren't able to, but we're pretty sad about not making it.
Well, I was there, so I don't have an excuse like you other three people.
Well, I live in New York, dude. Like, I'm not close.
Yes, am I close? Chicago is very close to Tulsa.
What the hell do I know? That's middle America.
Get a map.
I have maps in my classroom.
Well, study the map then.
Unlikely.
Yeah, it was a 9-hour drive. It was not easy.
All right, whatever. Let's talk about something else.
Yeah.
So cards.
We've got a new preview article for, gosh, what is this, the fourth chapter pack at this point?
Sure.
It is the fourth chapter pack. So it is still a long way in the future.
Yeah, my get over under is my birthday next June.
Yeah, oh, wow. That sounds really reasonable from the release schedule we've seen with their last LCG.
Well, it's got to go on the boat twice, and then it's got to ship to us once. Then it got to go back on the boat, ship from the boat, and then get lost, and then sit in a warehouse for 6 months. So
that's why there's no middle ground. It's only sea.
Oh!
So we've got big news in this pack. There's two things I really want to hit on with this pack, and we'll, you know.
Either one's great.
Yeah, pretty much. So one of them is we get a champ card back already. How crazy is that?
And a good one.
Yeah. And, I mean, I guess we
saw a champ card already.
We were getting Bandit Lord back, but this is the first one we see the full text of.
We saw, didn't we see the readers?
Did we see the full text? I don't think we saw the full text.
We did not see the full text.
Oh, yeah. I think we all just assumed it's the same besides Naval.
We shall see. I don't know. First Note winner, got tweaked a little bit. Better stats by a smidge. 3-5-1 now. Six reserve is not terribly surprising. Seems to be the default. And now it bounces cost three or lower to hand. I think that seems pretty solid.
And I think it's even better scaled up for 2.0 than it was in 1.0.
Very possibly.
I think it also has to do some more heavy lifting, being now one of the more prevalent resets. I think it fills a different role than it did. I mean, the same general role, but a more significant, prominent one than in first ed.
Yeah. It's good that it got the plot deck limit one text.
Absolutely.
That'd be dumb.
Yeah.
It would make little guys completely unplayable if it didn't.
Yeah, I almost didn't see that at first. I'm still not very happy with that text size and placement, so
I really wish it were 4 gold.
It'd be pretty outrageous if that were the case.
I don't know. I feel like it should be automatically able to play one thing that can stay in play.
Yeah. Most you can play Jorah.
But Jorah will bounce back to hand.
I know.
I think the reason that they wanted the gold to be a little lower than that is so that it wasn't a potential first turn option.
But I liked it as a first turn option.
I mean, it might be. You could still have set up.
Well, yeah, if you're going to take the risk of setting up your Tywin and them not having March to the Wall.
Oh, no, I meant if you set up like a King's Road and then on your turn, you pop it, use this gold, drop Jaime, and then...
That's very situational, though. It's not reliably a first turn play. You can't lock in your plot deck and say, okay, I'm using this turn one no matter what.
Right.
You can once we get one more champ card.
Yeah.
You mean Knights of the Hollow Hill?
Yeah. That's pretty much exactly what I mean.
We'll see what happens. I don't know. I haven't talked to Greg in a while, so I don't know where that stands.
Maybe they're going to go in order of champs that are being fuddy-duddies about second edition, which I think does put Greg second in line.
Very possibly.
The Europeans are all excited, so they're the easiest.
Yeah, we'll throw them bones like 4 cycles from now.
And we'll see how excited they are when they don't get corsets for like 3 more months.
I don't think it's that bad. I think I've been hearing rumors that they're planning a simultaneous worldwide release.
Yeah, that's
I heard
giant
that too.
Rumor.
I was
no
being
one
a sarcastic
any,
ass.
Yeah.
No one has any confirmation on that.
Nobody does. And if it is the case, it kind of cracks me up a little bit to enforce that kind of, you know, Wizards of the Coast style release date. So there was one other kind of bigger issue that this chapter pack preview really kind of made me wonder about. And I don't know if it's really struck anybody else this way, but I'm staring at Priest of the Drowned God, and it already, let's say, makes me worry a little bit about some of the design principles. Because these lower cost characters, I was under the impression, were going to be scaled back. And here we've got a character that is, by default, a 3-for-3 non-unique bicon with what I'm sure will be a good trait.
Quality trait, yep.
Yeah. So, like, already like that, even in first ed, I'd be like, okay, I'm listening at least. And then you throw in this ability to boost other characters with this good trait. Like, I don't know. This just seems really above what I expected for a second edition curve. Like, is anyone else worried that if we get many cards like this, it very quickly skews back down and these 6 and 7 costers are not playable?
Scaling up fast if this is going to be the norm.
Yeah.
But he may be like the bomb piece that goes with a bunch of other wildly inefficient Drowned God guys. Like, he may be the all-star.
I also think that they're trying to make Greyjoy a counter for Targaryen.
Possibly, with some strength boosts. Man, still real efficient for that.
I mean, I agree, but, like, what's the best Drowned God character we have right now?
Aeron.
Who has one icon,
well,
right?
There's also the army. Drowned Men, I think.
Yeah, but even they're not great, and they're already doing giant strength boosts.
Right.
I'm certainly playing those guys if this guy's available, though.
Definitely. But I mean, the way second ed is, like, isn't this guy just, like, by dint of his stats as a 3-3 bicon? Like, isn't he...
Forget the trades, he's still good.
He good? Yeah. Yeah.
He's not on good.
So,
but I mean, look at Will, the card Will. That's also significantly stronger than anything in the course.
Also unique, at least, though. And with a built-in drawback.
But what I'm saying is, I think the core set is intentionally underpowered.
Maybe. Since those are evergreen cards. On the other hand, that also means very quickly no one plays anything for set.
So. I mean, again, think of the 1.0 core set.
There's five cards that see play.
Yeah, something like that. Like, there's just not a lot of cards that see play out of the 1.0 core set. I don't know how it, gentlemen who play other games, are the core sets, like, constantly played in Star Wars?
Yeah, there's still a Sith. Good bit. Yeah, definitely.
I mean, I guess you have to because it's the pods, right? So that's probably a bad example.
Oh, I mean, Netrunner, there's a ton of stuff out of the core. Yeah, out of two, I'm not even convinced you absolutely have to have three cores. You can build a very solid Gabriel deck on the runner side, and probably still a fairly solid. I would probably go with his Bioroid on the corp side.
Okay, so I guess we're gonna have
perfect,
to wait.
But like you would be respectable still.
Right. I guess we're gonna have to wait for L5R honestly to see how they build an LCG with another LCG with rotation in mind.
Right.
So we won't know for a couple of years, but it's possible that that is a design decision.
Yeah, it is.
True. I mean, he also bounces with versus Snow. I mean, if that plot really does become
amazing,
ubiquitous.
Yeah, like the three cost spot could hurt a lot.
I mean, maybe, but like, did the existence of first Snow keep you from playing really efficient two drops in first ed?
No, but first Snow wasn't going to be in 70-90% of the decks.
Yeah, first Snow also didn't have reserve, right?
Right.
Like, you first Snow rule by decree was a thing, but then you're giving up two plot slots. It's not exactly the same.
Yeah, there's a built-in rule by decree effect, which I think is something we didn't bring up enough about first Snow Winter a moment ago. Like, by default, there is a hand limiter to force some discards after that, which bumps first Snow of Winter quite a bit.
Well, and there's also the other plot that you guys will name for me that lowers reserve by two. And that's an amazing play immediately before first Snow of Winter, right?
I would say probably after.
I would agree with that.
I think I like it before because that forces them to play out their hand.
Yeah.
And then you can first Snow to bounce everything back, and
yeah,
then
it's
they're like
tough.
Just gonna get it.
It doesn't
that
line
sounds
up
like more brutal play just with Econ being so unreliable at this
point.
Yeah,
exactly. Like you're basically forcing them to waste turns either way.
Yeah. I was gonna say they're not in a great spot either way. Because they probably just don't have the income to get it all out there.
And eventually you know what comes.
What?
You got me. March the Wall?
No.
We are nearly done with the house reviews from the set, and it looks tentatively like wrapping them up is going to line up very nicely with the release of the core set. So I'm not saying that FFG worked their schedule around us, but
they worked their schedule around us.
You know, they did. They definitely did. So you're all welcome. And you get to, you know, have our knowledge imparted to you before you pick up the actual core set. So this week, I think we will be imparting knowledge about, the House of Baratheon.
And next week?
And then we'll wrap it up with Greyjoy next week.
And then the week after, we tell you how to play and build.
Yeah, we'll kind of delve into that. Imparting knowledge may be kind of a strong term. As we generally say, you know, we'll, I'm sure, need to revisit some of these ratings later, so we'll see how accurate we were.
We'll spew our half-intelligent bullshit and philosophies. It'll be great.
A lot about philosophies and a little bit about letter grades. General A through F system for anybody popping in new to the show. A's are going to be bomb auto includes for decks, and F's should never be used at all.
Ever.
Ever.
All right. Will, go first.
Oh, man. I'm first this week? Man. Well, I get a solid one at least. This is Maester Cressen. He's a 3-cost, 3-strength power icon, and of course he's unique. But not loyal. He's a Maester, and as a marshaling action, kneel Maester Cressen to choose a condition attachment and discard it from play. What that effectively reads right now in the meta is your opponent must play Milk of the Poppy on Maester of Cressen.
Whose house?
And all your positive attacks are now shitty, too.
Well, he only discards attachments.
Yeah, your positive attachments are now shitty. Oh, wait. Oh, only condition. My bad.
Yeah. I was going to say, most of them are weapons at the moment.
Yeah. Okay. Good, good.
Yeah. But Milk of the Poppy, he's the answer to what is one of the defining removal cards at the moment. And he's really good at it.
Super good.
Granted, your opponent, like I alluded to, pretty much just has to play Mocha the Poppy on him first.
I mean, but then confiscation is one. Yeah, confiscation is still not included too.
Very possibly. I don't know. I'm not sure that I feel myself having to if I'm running Bera or Bera.
Oh, I do.
Banner, but
Melisandre's kind of good, and I'd like to protect her.
Kind of good. Yeah. Only a little bit. We'll get to her.
Yeah. So I think Crescent is an A.
I agree. Agree. A for agree.
I don't see not throwing him in decks he's eligible for a long time.
Yeah. Oh, man. At least we don't have him at the gates.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's coming in the same pack Valor is. Did you hear?
We should just get a pack of old flames from First Ed that Aaron and Tommy like.
Do it.
No.
And that's throwing Twin South.
But yeah, Crescent is completely incredible, and until, guess what, Valor comes out, he's a 3-0. At least a 2-0, probably a 3-0.
I was going to say I would lean towards 2 if I'm also including...
Confiscation.
Confiscation. Yeah.
Fair enough, yeah.
Between those two cards, you can keep your bombs pretty much protected, because you can confiscate the tears or Die by the Swords out, and you can use him for any milks, and keeping your big cost guys clean seems to be... You know, what the game within the game becomes very quickly.
It turns out Bera has some they want to protect like that.
Like the next card.
Yeah. Oh,
Dirty Girl.
Oh, I'm sure Kyle doesn't have the cards open in front of him.
Oh, of course not. Usual.
It's all right. I got it.
Thanks, Tom.
That takes us to the aforementioned Melisandre. She is a 5-cost unique Baratheon character with no loyalty. She has an intrigue and a power icon, 4 strength, Lady and R'hllor traits. Then she has the reaction, after you marshal or play a R'hllor card, choose and kneel a character, limit once per round.
Maybe the best character in the game right now. She's an A+, not an A. But maybe the best character in the game right now. Probably is.
Oh.
She's quite good. She's, I guess, the second edition version of Castle of the Rock?
No, at least Castle of the Rock had the attachment limit.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
I really wish she had an attachment limit. Yeah, but you can play any R'hllor card.
Right. So she does trigger off of the event as well.
Well, sure. But Castellan was locations or non-unique locations or non-unique characters. Come on.
Well, and anything in house.
Has that been hit locations?
Yeah.
You sure?
Castellan triggered off of you playing a Lannister
character. Oh, off of you playing I thought you meant they could kneel locations like that.
Oh, no.
Just talking like that's about how easy it is to trigger.
No, yeah, I agree. Castellan's easier to trigger, but it's also a million times easier to get rid of.
Yeah, both her traits are positive.
Yes, and I'm sure we'll
not
get more
positive. Bruno's plot.
She's not tears, which is great. She's not loyal, which is phenomenal.
She's an A+.
Yeah,
I would bend her over the painted table and make a shadow baby.
Yeah, I think she'll be the kind of the cornerstone of the Baratheon Neil deck for a long time to come.
Yeah, she's so good. Like, I think she's probably the best card right now, and Tyrion becomes the best card as we get more effects that need him. But, like, they're 1A and 1B somehow.
Maybe. Well, the interesting thing about that comment, Aaron, is that they're going to both scale equally well because there's going to be more R'hllor cards to come, just like there will be more things for Tyrion to trigger off of. So,
part of me feels like they're going to, like, R'hllor is now going to be like Martell Nobles was in first edition, where they're just maybe we shouldn't print too many more of these.
Right.
Because they're so close to critical mass now. And, like, Lightbringer specifically, which...
The limit once per round thing is...
But Lightbringer means you can use it every round.
Yeah, but using it once every round is not that big of a deal, in my opinion.
Unless you have other cards.
I mean, it's very strong.
I mean, given that you have 7-strength bombs, it's near broken.
But you can have a million R'hllors. You're still only doing it
once or twice.
Agreed.
I don't feel like it's going to be the build restriction the nobles were.
How is it any different than Alchemist Guildhall and Suppressed?
Okay, ready? The easiest way? Because you could shit out 18 characters in first edition. In second edition, 90% of what matters is that big dude you spent all your gold on. And when you completely neutralize that big dude every turn by playing a two-cost attachment over and over again...
No, I agree.
Neuter the game.
It's awesome. I just don't think that the power of this effect is going to warrant making less R'hllor cards.
I think it will.
Exactly.
I absolutely think it will.
Funnels it enough that whether your whole deck is it or you have just enough to drip one every turn, like it doesn't matter.
All you need is one way to stand, one way to have more than one guy that's going to carry your challenge phase, and it kind of becomes irrelevant.
Which is
like
nice.
If the Baratheon player is sitting there saying, okay, I have to kneel your guy, and you treachery Melisandre's reaction, and then you blow them out, it's not a big deal. Just sure. The same. You get triggered on your big boss guy that's sitting out there, be it Tywin or your own Robert or whoever it is, gets knelt by Melisandre, and then you've got your plot. You stand him up in the challenger's phase, and it doesn't matter.
Sure, except that there's also Stannis, which means that the board is largely going to be knelt. So you're going to have to be top decking really good characters or finding some more draw. There's also the issue that there's a plot that you can double up on that's going to kneel characters.
Yep.
And there's further the issue that you can combine this with other control effects. Just because she's the only kneel doesn't mean that you can't, say, strip someone's icons.
All of those comments are fair, but if you're going to put all of your resources and all of your deck building into making that happen, you're going to make yourself very, very susceptible to getting rushed.
Once we have rush, I agree. Right now, not at all.
Yeah, we don't have a what I would really feel is a rush deck.
I agree with you. All I'm saying is that long term, it invalidates this as a tier one strategy.
If we get good rush eventually, I'm not convinced FFG knows how to make rush or is willing.
You're pretty close to it now. If you're looking in the right places, you're pretty close to being able to do it now.
Yeah, but close isn't doing it.
But that means that it will happen.
I don't know if that's
whether
true.
FFG intends by not, accident. They're going to stoop it into it.
Yeah, but if FFG stoops into it, they've shown such a great willingness to immediately nerf Rush in the past that I don't. I've always liked Rush. Like that Dragon deck ultimately has a lot of Rushy qualities to it. I played the PBT. I played Siege. I like Rush, but FFG does everything in their power to neuter Rush whenever it gets good.
But you invariably find other ways to rush.
And building a deck of pure R'hllor cards is silly. Moving on.
Okay.
I mean, Melisandre, I think we all agreed, was an A. I don't know if anybody had rated that.
I gave it the plus.
But it was possible.
Like, I don't see a situation where you don't run at least one of her ever.
So it's A's around, except Aaron gives an A+.
Yeah.
Sounds good.
All right. Robert Baratheon is a loyal king and lord. 7 cost, 5 strength, military power icons, intimidate and renown. Robert Baratheon gains +1 strength for each other kneeling character in play. He's a ridiculous bomb, only held back at all by his lack of intrigue icon. And he's got the house that best covers that lack of intrigue.
Yeah, he is.
He's one of my favorite 7 costers for sure.
That 7.
Intimidate, by the way, for those who don't remember, is you can kneel a character whose strength is equal to or less than how much you won the challenge by.
Mm-hmm.
Correct.
So he gets stupidly strong later in challenges.
Yeah, and if they try to defend against him, it just adds to it. Or if you send people to attack with you, with him, it adds to it. It's
a snowball effect.
Like melee.
Yeah, and again, another character who's unreal with Stannis.
Mm-hmm.
I have to jump in and agree there with Will. In melee, this guy can be an absolute powerhouse.
Yeah.
I feel like he's so much more likely to get hit with that Tears, though. Like, it's much harder to control Tears of Lys in melee.
Agreed.
You gotta have ways to protect him if you're gonna play him, for sure.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
More so than you would need with some of the other 7 costumes.
Yeah. And Joust, Seen in Flames is usually enough.
Yeah.
And, you know, hopefully you're probably getting the Neil off of that Seen in the Flames as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, he's
an absurd combo.
He's really, really worth it.
All right, so we've done this with the other 7 and 6 costers. What do you guys think about him relative to the other 7s?
Second best in the game.
He's really up there. I mean, the best ones I feel are the ones that generate you know, double the usefulness compared to one character in some form or another. And
well, who do you think is the best?
Taking out a defender. Do what?
Who do you think is the best of the seven casters?
That's a tough call. It may be Robert.
I think it's Tywin, just for the
econ. Yeah, me too. The econ, yeah. And he gets an extra strength boost too.
I think it's a toss between Robert and Tywin, followed closely after by Eddard.
I don't know. I don't personally feel Tywin's that far up there, but at least we can all agree Robert is in contention for the top. For
intrigue sure. Icons matter. Yep. Not the challenge, the icon.
And the income matters. Yeah,
the income is huge. Lani ends up just being able to play whatever it wants and everything else has to wait. So I'm going to give him an A-.
A-.
I'm an A for alcohol.
Yeah, I think I'm still giving him a flat A. He demands your opponent answer him.
I'll give him an A in Corset Land and B+ later.
Yeah, I'm trying to keep in mind later. He just gets slightly less good later.
I like that the Reigning King, when the books start, is the best seven coster out of the Corset.
Absolutely, that's really cool.
That's pretty cool.
Well, or Tywin, the guy who's secretly really in charge.
Yeah, I was about to say that's the follow-up, is that the two guys really running the show at the beginning are the two that are good right out of the box.
All we need is John Arryn, and we really have it.
Well, we don't have John Arryn, so like, isn't that the most accurate? He's already dead.
And poor John Arryn. Have him at the beginning of the books either. We used to talk maybe, about him.
Pre-books could be like an attachment, John Arryn's corpse.
Attached to a King's Landing location.
Yep.
Oh my. I think that definitely means it's time to move on to the next card.
You're up, Will.
Yep.
It's another use for the poison token.
There you go. Alright. Selyse Baratheon. She of course is unique and not loyal. She's a 3-cost, 2-strength character with intrigue and power icons. Has the House Florent, Lady, and R'hllor traits. And challenges action, pay 1 gold to choose a Baratheon character. Until the end of the phase, that character gains an intrigue icon. Hey, conveniently, here's a way both to get Neil out of Mel and
protect Robert.
Mm-hmm. Or Stannis, if need be.
Which means her otherwise mediocre body becomes really good.
I don't know if I would go really good. It's still kind of expensive to keep up with, but like she's reasonable.
I mean, you don't have to use that one until you feel like there's a situation where they're saving that 1 gold and so on.
Right.
You know, do you save that 1 gold and that tears at that point, knowing that you can just give Robert the intrigue icon?
Yeah.
So here's the more important question to me is, you know that you're running 3 Melisandre. How many copies of her are you running?
1.
Yeah, I think just 1. She's not a unique I care enough about.
Exactly, and so she's a C+ to me.
B-.
Yeah, I'm with Tommy. I think C+, and she'll trend downward as we get some better stuff at this slot.
Hit the nail on the head there, Will.
I don't know if I ever don't run one of her.
If there's a better Selyse.
Like if there's a better character with the same name, sure. But, like, if she remains the only Selyse, I don't expect we're going to get a bunch of Selyses. It's not that important of a character.
The fact that she has the R'hllor trait does...
Unless you hit the critical mass of R'hllor.
Right, which I assume we're not, and you guys assume we are, so...
I like it. I mean, I dug that Myrcella that gave Knights intrigue icons. I'm like, this is nice. I don't know, it's solid. It's all positive, because there's no drawback here. So that, I think, bumps up to the B- for me.
Okay.
Cool story.
Tomas?
Yep, that takes us to Sir Davos Seaworth. He is a unique Baratheon character. 4-cost, military icon, power icon, non-loyal, 3-strength. He has the Knight and Smuggler trait, and has stealth. With the interrupt, when Sir Davos Seaworth is killed, return him to your hand instead of placing him in your dead pile.
Phenomenal.
Phenomenal? I think good. I mean, phenomenal.
Solid. Like, even stealth if he didn't have so that good. Interrupt, if he was just a bicon with stealth at this cost point, I think that's solid in second ed. But the interrupt is really nice gravy to have on top. It's expensive to plan on using that as claim. So
exactly.
So here's what I love about him is that not only do you get the stealth, which is, you know, we've talked about how good that is in 2.0, but thematically, this card works great with Wildfyre.
Yeah.
And that makes sense that he should. And when you're constantly getting to bounce him back to your hand and you're kneeling out your opponent's board because you're keeping the board small, I don't know, the synergy for me is phenomenal.
I just feel
and
like
this guy just doesn't even care about Tears of Lys. He does not care. You want to waste it on this guy? Great.
Yeah, yeah. An opponent's basically never going to bother to trigger it on Davos. There's no real gain out of it unless they really feel like taxing you that fold.
Right? So eat the stealth on the chin because you're not going to use your event on it. Yeah. You know, it's a great, I don't know, I like him a lot.
Do you run two?
I think he's solid. Always being able to have a character, and well, especially right now, knowing that he's either on the board giving you the stealth, or you always have a character in hand to play, which I have found has sometimes been a struggle with my decks, is nice.
Aaron, to answer your question, I think in the current core set, I will run two.
I agree with you.
I think I run two now, but that's going to go down to one fast.
We'll see.
Yeah. Well, not fast,
it
but
I don't think it'll be fast.
If Verithion gets more stealth, because I think that's the biggest competing thing there.
Huge.
Yeah. Plus, you just, I mean, the two is almost never possibly a downside. You're never going to draw a dead dupe that is a wasted card.
You can actually draw a dead dupe, and all things considered, four is not expensive for repeatable claim soak. Almost every plot that you have, you're going to be able to replay this guy.
Also, treachery.
Right. I was about to say, unless it's some pretty specific events, but...
Well, I almost wonder if that's a thing that we should exclude, right? Because treachery is so ubiquitous to all these cards. I don't know.
Right. Unless they treachery Mel's ability or Solis's icon granting or...
And that's the thing for Baratheon. I mean, they've got enough things to coax it out earlier.
I think there's only 2.5 effective... like core deck main houses. I think that Baratheon and Lannister are the two like clear T1 core houses. And then like Greyjoy has something going and Tark has something going, but they're not quite there. So I feel like at least in the core set environment, making sure being super ready to see a ton of Lanny or Barra is necessary as
That's
a meta call.
But if you're Barra, you've also got Seen in the Flames to potentially strip treachery if, you know, if that's going to be an issue for you.
That's a good point.
Yeah, that's not what I'm using it for, but yeah.
Well, I'm just saying if that happens to be So I mean, overall, like I like Davos. I'm feeling like a B+ on him maybe at the moment. Maybe just
what I was gonna give him.
Yeah.
Right now, at least.
Mm-hmm.
Give him he's like maybe a B- later, but he's a B+ now.
Yeah, I'm splitting the difference with a B.
He's like getting tried hard for semester before he learns what beer is. Or Davos.
Welcome back, Kyle.
Hey, Kyle, did you rate it?
Did I what? Yeah, I gave it a B+.
Okay.
For beer.
Drain Baratheon? Sorry. Drain Baratheon, 2-cost lady, 1 strength, power icon, interrupt. When Drain Baratheon is killed, choose a Nala character. Okay. It's good.
Yeah? I mean, 1x pretty much forever?
Yeah, I mean, great with Wildfire.
Yeah.
Basically an extra one of that Neil plot at that in that situation.
Filthy accusations.
Yeah. Barra's getting to not abuse, but exploit Wildfire almost akin to Greyjoy offensively Valoring in First Ed.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
And that's what it's starting to feel like. Between Davos and her, there's enough bomb characters that can control what's left on the board. You want a small board so you can control it. You have a lot of effects that are positive or at least neutral coming off of a character dying. Your weenies are phenomenal heroes of a weenie, and your big characters control and then in a sense dominate your opponent's big characters. I mean,
she really captures the TV show for you, doesn't she?
Oh, brings it to your knees.
But yeah, that's totally true.
Tears.
Yeah, and I don't think we're in any danger of seeing another Shireen that ever competes with her.
Unless we get character agendas.
Yeah, hopefully those will be a little smoother next time around.
After they made
they were bad.
They were hit or miss.
And they weren't all good, but they weren't. None of them, like, they were hard to figure out, you know?
Some of them were bad.
Yeah.
Well, she was bad. Right?
Like, yeah.
She's the bad one. All the others are at least acceptable.
I'm not even sure Kevin was acceptable.
Yeah, I was going to say, I never liked Kevin at all, but.
He was a solid body, so I always thought he was okay.
This card, on the other hand, I like.
Yeah, this card. It's so weird, like, because she's only ever a one of, but she's also essentially an auto include. So it's tough for me. I guess I averaged that out at like a B.
Well, so right away when I saw her, the way that I looked at her was, okay, you're Cersei's attendant, right?
Right.
Mm-hmm.
But you're unique, and you cost one more. Your strength isn't scaled at all, and your icon is less valuable.
Yeah, but I think you're under. I still truly believe you guys are underselling how important Neil is in 2.0.
Oh, the Neil redundancy is huge. I totally agree. But, I mean, I think that that's one of the tricks of rating this card, right, is looking at her versus 1.0. It's so hard to tell how long it's going to endure as a valuable card. Right now, I'm going to give this thing a B, even though it's a 1 per.
Yeah. Okay.
You're never unhappy to draw this card.
Except, yeah. Usually not.
Okay. If she had the R'lyeh trait, she'd be bonkers.
Yeah, there's, thank goodness she doesn't.
Yeah. I like her. After they made her, they burnt the mold.
Is that a B? Oh,
I just want to make a fire joke.
Yeah. B for burn.
B for burn. Right on. I'd take my Shireen medium rare.
Oh. Oh. Wow. Well, this is a really awkward time for, I don't know, Stannis to come up right after her in the card list.
Daddy.
But here we go anyway. He is a 6-cost unique, and he is indeed loyal. He has a military and a power icon and 5 strength, lord and small council traits, and each player cannot stand more than 2 characters during the standing phase. And then there's interesting reminder text here that's not for a keyword. It just reminds you that non-character cards are not prevented from standing by this ability, which is a little hilarious to see right after it specifies 2 characters. I don't know.
Stannis was always letter of the law, right?
I guess so. But granted, Stannis also, because of that letter of the law, like, if you needed that reminder text, he would be like, what are you talking about? I already said that.
I love that the brother who killed the other 2 gets to be loyal to his house.
Yeah.
Whatever. I think he's...
Wait. How the hell did he kill Robert?
He was complicit by not being there? I don't know.
He wanted to... No, shit. You're right. He only killed 1 brother. And his daughter. And by proxy, his wife.
Spoilers?
It's all good.
Spoilers? It's all good. Fuck it. We don't care anymore. He scales up.
Shows not allowed, like, guys.
He gets so much better as the game goes on.
Oh yeah, he's definitely like a mid game card once you've got kind of your Neil engine, so to speak, running.
Oh no,
yeah,
I don't mean that. I mean like in a year, he's a better card than he is now. Stuff.
Yeah, that will also. In fact, that will make him relevant earlier in the game.
Yeah, once he hits up the Iron Bank, gets an army behind him. Oh, mid game for sure.
Is he more impactful than our good old Super Stannis?
So different, hard to compare.
This one,
like, there's no first period card that does anything like him, is there?
I mean, there's plot effects that keep some characters from...
I suppose the brothel is somewhere.
Yeah.
I mean, even that's very, very, like, different. Like, the brothel's not letting you choose to stand, so, you know what I mean?
I think he's great.
I think
if you're playing a house that's all about control and you can't keep 2 dudes down... I don't know.
I mean, we've already seen you've got Melisandre, Robert, and Shireen to keep the dudes down, regardless of any other Neil effect.
Almost like a repeatable wildfire, but with kneeling, which does the same thing for you. It keeps your character count that's really involved in the round low.
Yep.
And there's no Vigilant.
He's also one of the worst 6-costers, like turn 1 or 2.
Yeah, you really want to draw him later in the day. Yeah.
I think it's kind of funny what a hard counter Rob is to him.
How is Rob a hard counter to him?
Well,
Rob Stark.
Yeah. I mean, it kind of dictates some challenge order and stuff, but yeah, it definitely...
At that point, you just use him as Claim Soak, honestly. Like, I've seen a lot of people lose Barra games because they keep him alive after he served his purpose. Once you're rushing for the win and you want to get a bunch of renowned guys in challenges and push stuff through, you can just let him die and let everyone stand. He's not collecting power himself.
You crazy, Aaron.
I've seen people lose because they keep him around, and, like, the other guy just has... better stuff at that point. It's like, you should just kill him and let all your better other guys overwhelm.
So who's the best 6-coster so far that we've seen?
Jamie.
I lean towards Jamie.
What other 6-costers? Rob Stark. He's better than Rob Stark in a weird way. Even though Robert Hart counters him. Balon's better than he is. But we haven't covered that yet. I feel like Khal Drogo's probably better than him.
Or actually, no, Doran is the 6, right?
Yeah, Doran is the 6. Doran's garbage, but Khal Drogo's probably better than him. I'd rather have an extra challenge as a general rule.
I don't know.
How about Tyrell? Mace. Not Mace. What's his name? Randall.
Yeah, it's Randall.
Randall's probably better also, right? Because Randall gives no shits about his Neil.
I think Randall, Jamie, and Rob are better than he is.
You think Rob Stark's better? I don't know if Rob Stark's better. Like, I think what Rob Stark mostly does is dictate
Stand is pretty good.
Yeah, but, like, just don't kill anyone, unless they have that one sacrifice card.
Right.
All right, whatever. I'm going to give him an A-. I'm going to give him a B+. And yeah, he'll be an A- once more cards come out.
I think I'm more in the B+ range as well.
That's where I'm at, B+.
Well, I'm in the A-, so fuck you guys.
Okay.
We're right on.
Tommy?
Yeah, that takes us to the Bastard in Hiding. It is a 2-cost, non-unique Baratheon character with a military and power icon, 2 strength, and the Bastard trait.
Yeah, not whatever. Four. D+.
D+?
Seems a little low.
That seems a little low. I feel like he's, you know, a very solid, like, C card in second ed. He's got that 2-2-2, like, stat line. His trait is not actively bad at the moment, though it may become on down the line. Like, he just rounds out a curve nicely, and
okay, it's something I'm
perfectly willing to, like, kill for claim.
Right, yeah, C-. I feel like he's a quintessential C.
Yeah.
Someone's going to have to die for mill claim every round. Might as well be him.
Well, might as well be Davos.
Yeah, if you can afford the 4 gold every turn, yep.
If you can afford the 4 gold every turn, you've already won.
Yeah,
the way maybe. Second Ed is, that is totally true.
Unless you're playing Lannister, then you can afford whatever you want whenever you want.
Yeah, sometimes you can. I actually I had enough spare gold to bounce Kyle's Tywin the other day.
Make it rain. That is awesome.
Which was pretty baller.
That was so dumb.
Heckman Jones is blushing at that. That is insane.
Oh, Jesus. All right, Fiery Followers. 3-for-2, Relora card, military and intrigue icon, reaction. After the dominance phase begins, stand Fiery Followers.
Great.
Well, incredible for winning dominance, which Barrel will want to do soon. Incredible with Sannis, incredible with Melisandre. So, great with great sauce on top.
Plus, super efficient. Looks really sick in second ed. Like, it looks a lot snappier than it did in first.
Yeah.
Plus, it's not loyal, nor is Melisandre, so you can plug. It's part of that module that you can plug into some other house if you want to go that way.
Yeah, and you're running 3 of in every Barrow deck right now.
Oh, yeah, totally. Like, I like this a lot. Like, I'm willing to say that that's like a solid B.
Yep.
It's not, you're not quite getting a full extra challenge out of it, but you're still getting some double duty, and that's pretty solid. Great mistakeness. Yeah.
I'll take a B.
So, Tears of Lys is so big, and anytime you have like these chuds you can throw in with it, very good.
Yeah, anytime that you can set across from your opponent and they try to play Tears of Lys and then realize they have no actual targets on your side, that's a pretty good feeling, right, Kyle?
Yeah, it's hilarious.
I think it's better for, like, your opponent if you're going second, has to assume you have Tears of Lys in hand if you have this guy standing, so they have to save something to defend.
Yeah.
3 per in your deck is a B at minimum.
I think so.
Yeah. So, B.
Yep.
Gotta be.
One of the better ones out there for sure.
Alright. Back to me with the King's Hunting Party. This one should be pretty quick. This is a 4-cost, non-unique, military icon and 6 strength. It's not loyal. It's an army. It has no attachments, and while an opponent controls a king character, King's Hunting Party gains an intrigue icon.
How many kings in the game right now?
Exactly one. Just Robert.
So,
while Barrett may be popular, I'm not going to bank on that.
F for now.
Yeah, this is by far the worst of the kind of 4-cost armies. And even when there are a few more kings in the game, I'm not sure it gets good enough.
I'm still not giving it an F.
I would play this under no circumstances.
I don't know. Yeah, I think it's an F for now. And while there are more kings, may raise to a D, but I don't
think so. Even then, like, I know in first ed we had every house had a king.
Not Martell.
So now Martell will never have a king. Night's Watch won't have a king. Tyrell won't have a king.
Tyrell might.
No,
Night's Watch might have the Night's King.
Okay, we're probably not getting kings in multiple houses. This card is shit. Can we move on?
Yeah, it's terrible. There isn't even hope in
the future. That sends us on to the next one. I think this will be a quick discussion as well.
All right, so that is the Dragonstone Faithful. It is the 1-cost, 1-icon reducer, non-loyal, Neil Dragonstone Faithful, to reduce the cost of the next Baratheon character you play, or you marshal.
A for a great card sufficient.
Yep, A. These are all A's. Ready?
You need them, whether you like them or not.
I'm still right there.
All right. This Vanguard. Go ahead.
They're lost on Nakami right now. I mean, it really is. If you don't have the feel for the fire, I watch so many games where the guys just sat with decent to good shit in their hand because they couldn't get it out on the board.
I mean, yeah.
Right. And it's not even their fault. It's like they made a bad deck. There's only so many resource cards right now. You can only, I mean, everyone's running triplicate of all of them. Like, it just is what it is.
They're the refugees.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Vanguard Lancer. 2 cost, 1 strength. Military and power icons. House Florent Knight. Reaction. After Vanguard Lancer enters play, choose an opponent's character or faction card and discard 1 power from that card. And this is why I gave the Bastard in Hiding such a bad rating. Because I think this guy is just strictly better.
I mean, he's not strictly better because he does have 1 less strength.
Yeah.
If he had 2 strength, he would be strictly better.
I get it. Okay, fine. Not strictly better, just better.
Yeah. But, yeah. I mean, I like him. I'm not as, like, enthused to just drop him on setup. So he does have that kind of slight kind of... I'm not quite willing to call it a downside, but maybe feel bad moment.
Yeah.
But really I do still like him.
They're just claim soak anyway. Like, he's fine for that. He dies just as well as the Bastion Hiding does.
Yeah, I mean, he does. And hopefully he does a little work for you beforehand. He's a little less likely to help push through challenges, but, like, he's perfectly acceptable. I think Barra likes having these options to kind of round things out, and Knights will only get some love. So, I mean, if I was willing to give the Bastard just a flat C, the Lancer's probably a C+.
I think the Lancer's a C, because I gave the Bastard a C-. And that's literally why.
People dedicate a whole plot slot to this effect in first edition. A++.
Yeah, that plot slot was because it was a river and it did rivery things, but okay.
A, what are details? Point is, this effect is an auto include in first ed, so ipso facto, this card's great.
Okay. Tommy? There is no Tommy.
We may not have a Tommy for the moment, listeners, so we will just soldier bravely on without him.
Fire away.
Alright, that sends us back around on the next card to me with Lightbringer. It's a 2-cost attachment, of course unique and loyal. Relore and weapon traits. Baratheon character only, and if attached character is Stannis Baratheon, he gains renown. Then the reaction after attached character gains 1 or more power, stand it. Limit once per phase. So
maybe the best attachment in the game.
I think this one might be my favorite out of the weapon attachments.
Best of the house attachments. I still love Steel of a Hand, and you guys are wrong about that.
Well, it's not a weapon.
Yeah, and Milk of the Poppy is obviously Milk of the Poppy, but like beyond those two, I think this is best. Is it better than Bodyguard?
I think so.
Yeah, I think so too.
I think I'm more talented.
Low, slow. Thank goodness it was loyal.
Barra has a lot of options to make sure that some of those effects that are the targeted removal effects never see play. So,
I mean, this has 3 absolutely incredible uses.
We got Stannis, we got Roberts, what else?
And we got any goddamn chud in the game.
Oh, yeah, that big one, where you just let them die and return this to hand.
Yeah, and then you just keep kneeling shit every single turn.
With Melisandre, just so the listeners can follow along, you keep replaying Lightbringer every turn, and that lets you trigger Melisandre again.
That is 100% worth 2 gold. That is a 2 gold per turn investment, as long as you can find Claim Soak, with which you can kneel anyone.
Very worth it.
Though you have to maintain Claim Soak.
It negates their entire military challenge.
Yeah. It negates military challenge and takes away their best character. Or you stick it on Robert, and you get to kneel 2 guys a turn while crushing face.
Face is crushed.
Crushed.
And it's a good answer to control a character that has an entry icon.
Yeah. Or 2 on Robert.
Or 2 on Robert.
I mean, it's great. I think, I don't know. He doesn't have a lot of... Well, I was about to say he doesn't have a lot of targets. I just keep thinking about the first ability there. But the secondary use with Mel probably still bumps it up to A. And actually, you know, may actually be hard to bring myself to stick it on characters that I want to leave it on if I've got Mel on them. So,
yeah, unless I'm rushing for the win, then I don't.
Yeah, it's kind of an awkward feeling. just not what I expected, you know?
Mm-hmm.
All right. I think the next one will be quick, too.
Dragonstone Port, zero gold, Dragonstone Limited, martial league action. Kneel the Dragonstone Port to reduce the cost of the next Wraithing card. You martial series by one. And Roy told us not to Wraith this.
Yeah. And I mean, I think that that's fair for these locations. They're all in that same spot as we've discussed the last few episodes for everybody except for Lannister. So, yeah, not much more to be said on those.
Right, you're up.
All right. Chamber of the Painted Table. It's a two-cost unique location. It is not loyal, has the Dragonstone trait, and reaction. After you win Dominance, kneel Chamber of the Painted Table to move one power from an opponent's faction card to your own. Okay, so if there's ever like a rush build that really comes together that Baratheon can be one of the houses in, I think I probably look at this. But right now, this kind of like slow rolly power gain, I don't think fits into their control game. I think that slot is better spent elsewhere on, I don't know, more control effects?
It's okay in Fealty. It ends up getting cut most of the time, but like it's good. Because the Fiery Followers are usually going to be enough to win you dumb. So yeah. It's got that. You can always Iron Throne it up if you really want to. It's a good card. It's going to be, I think, the best rush tool in the game eventually. That we've seen thus far. That's not a character, anyway.
Yeah. Well, unless Lightbringer comes together as a rush tool.
Right, right. But yeah, I think that this can end up good. And if we ever get anything like Prize, it goes up a big notch.
Yeah. Anything.
You don't think the Iron Throne's better than this?
Which is the Iron Throne? Wind Dominance, basically?
Yep.
Yeah.
No, I think this is better than the Iron Throne.
I like that. I mean, games are going longer, so if we can get this to go off 3-4 rounds in a row, I mean, that is significant power swap.
Yeah, especially if you're running any 2-flame power or Renown.
Yeah.
I'd rather just straight out Wind Dominance then, if I do Wind Dominance, then if you have power, then I can have it.
Yeah, one is a 2-power swing, though.
Oh, that's absolutely fair, but it's conditional, as opposed to I automatically win Dominance and I automatically get a power.
Well, if you're running one, you're probably running the other. But Fiery Followers is, in most cases, going to win you Dominance anyway.
Agreed.
Yeah, very rarely need more than 2 or 3 to win Dom.
I mean, and again, this is going to be a recurring theme, I guess, for this week. But unless you're playing Lannister, who just generate all that gold with Tyrion, if they didn't have a use for it, you know?
It's fair.
But yeah,
if they don't have the power to steal, then you're doing other things right.
Exactly. If they don't have any power to steal, you're winning anyway. So, like, if this is, like, this isn't win more. It's almost like if, you know, it can tilt a game. Yeah.
Which is kind of important right now. And I really do worry about games going to time come competitive season.
So, I'm going to give it a C+ right now, but I think it has the potential to get a fair amount higher, up to maybe like a B.
I'm going to say C just because I'm really unsure about
Yeah, I think I'm with you there in the C range, Tommy. That's what I'm looking to do right now.
I'll give it a C plus.
I definitely like it more than Tommy will do. So we'll go C plus. For cool, cool story, bro.
So does that land us on Red Keep?
It sure does.
Okay, that is a 3-cost unique Baratheon location that is loyal. It has the King's Landing trait, and it says the Red Keep contributes 2 strength to your side during any power challenge in which you control a participating character. Interrupt. When the challenge phase ends, if you have not lost the power challenge this round, kneel the Red Keep to draw 2 cards.
Okay.
Is this the best of the draw locations? Because I think it's... Which one would you say is better?
I don't think any of them are better. I think they all have different positives. I think the Mander that you can potentially trigger it twice, or that you and that you get the draw. Well, that's only with Greyjoy, I know. Or Night's Watch? Night's Watch. But that you can potentially trigger it twice, or and that you get the draw during the challenge phase, so you can potentially draw into something that can help you.
I think the Tyrell, the Lannister, and the Baratheon ones are all equivalent.
Yeah, and Lannister gives you the other different options for rush, for extra power, to win on defense. It gives you multiple chances to do it. So I think they're all differently great, the 3 of them. But those 3 are just incredible.
Yep.
Like, I think the Stark has the worst one.
Yeah, yeah. It forces that Stark loyalty without other upside that some of these others have.
I feel like I don't remember what the Martell one was.
Martell,
they don't have one.
It's Gaston.
Oh, right.
Oh, yeah.
Gaston. Actually, I always kind of figured Sunspear was the...
No, Gaston's the three-cost one, isn't it?
Well, are they all three?
Yeah, I guess so. I think so.
Wait, Gaston? No, Gaston is two.
Is it? Okay. Is Sunspear two?
It's Sunspear. Will's right.
Is it? Okay. Sorry, Will. You win.
Ha-ha!
Yeah, it's hard to compare...
Actually, Sunspear's two. They're both two.
It's hard to compare any of the Martell and Targ ones, because they're very different cards. They're not, you know?
I mean, I think it's fair to say, if nothing else, like, that this is a fantastic card.
I think it's an A-plus card.
And I don't know. I personally feel it's a little better, because it has a built-in ability to help you trigger it, which the other house's equivalent locations do not have. So I feel like it actually pulls a little bit of extra duty, almost like a character. Yeah, all the duty. So I really like this one. I feel like this one's A+.
Dear FFG, never reprint Frozen Solid. Signed, everyone.
There you go.
Thank you.
Oh, and one other thought on the red keep. It forces your opponent to, like, keep you from activating it. Like, if you both just sit there and pass, you get to trigger it, which doesn't happen with anything else except, I guess, the Stark.
Well, which doesn't happen in a Game of Thrones, but okay.
Not generally, but I'm saying you have to actively work towards those. It's flipped on the red keep. Your opponent must actively work to keep you from triggering it.
Right.
Which
I like a lot.
Yeah.
I've never dropped an A+, but I'll give this an A.
Mira's not an A+, Mr.
Nope.
Stark boy?
Yeah, I don't especially think he was with anymore. Us when we decided that.
Yeah, I was definitely not rating cards back then.
Princes of the Sun Viper.
Even further from that.
Burning on the Sands.
That would get an A+.
There you go.
All right.
But that would have been pre-Harrenhal, so.
True. Yeah, no, it gets an A+ anyway. If you're killing a dude, yeah, I'll take it. All right, Consolidation of Power?
Yes, indeedy.
Loyal, one-cost event, Marshaling Action. Choose a Neil up to 4 total strength worth of characters controlled by the same player. Then choose one of those characters and have it gain 1 power.
A?
Yeah, we could just give that an A. I mean, it's not quite as good as,
Harry the Riverlands.
And Harry the Riverlands, but it's fucking nearly close. As good.
Yeah. I think the more common thing here is going to be kneeling 2 characters, hopefully. Hit a 2 and a 1 or 2 2s if you're lucky.
Just hit Davos, you know what I mean? Hit like a guy like that. Hit their best little stealth guy. Isn't Theon 4 strength too?
3, I think, and Asha's 4.
Okay, so either of them are great.
Yeah, it's both out there.
Yeah, totally. I mean, it is a fantastic card, even without the R'hllor trait. I mean, in any Bera deck for the foreseeable future, like, you're always playing this, right?
Oh, yeah. So
I feel like that forces us into an A rating, right?
I mean,
it's an A.
Yeah.
Maybe I am going to go a little bit out on a limb here and say this may be an A- with the core set environment being skewed to these larger characters, but... As maybe we're getting with the chapter packs, as the lower cost stuff becomes more relevant.
Gets this, even better.
Yeah.
I can see that.
All right, Will.
Okay, we're on to Ours is the Fury. This is a 2-cost loyal event. Play only during a challenge in which you are the defending player. In action, choose a kneeling Baratheon character you control. That character is now participating as a defender. If you win this challenge, stand that character. My first thought is, this kind of cracks me up between that, Lightbringer, and the Fiery Followers. I start wondering which house is supposed to have stand as a theme. So that's
it's a sub-theme.
Yeah.
And defense. This card is super frustrating to play against.
Yeah, it seems all right. Depends. It really depends on the characters you already have available on the board. I'm not super enthused about paying 2 for this.
I think it's a very good card, and it's already edged out because I've got all the event slots I can handle.
Yeah,
I just don't have room
for
it.
Most of those events cost gold. And when you're comparing these, like, if this costs 1, then it's back in the...
Well, what are you running it over?
No,
like, you're playing.
That's what I'm saying. Is you're not.
Well, but even if it costs 1, like, you're not playing it over Seen in Flames. You're not playing it over Consolidation. You're not playing it over Tears. You shouldn't be playing it over To the Sword.
Okay, so zero cost.
Yeah, then you could play. But, like, at one cost?
Yeah. So, like, right now at two? Like, I don't know. Like, is this it, like a C minus?
I think it's a C. It's a good card. It's just, like, Barra got a lot of bombs.
I think it might still be at one per, just as a show me. Given the event package that you just listed, Aaron, you could probably squeeze one in.
I don't think I would. Like, the game is so small, I could just pretend I have it. Like, everyone knows every card, you know?
It's fair.
It's not a huge boon either way, I'm thinking. So.
Yeah, I agree.
Did you drop a rating on us on that one, Tommy?
I think I'll probably give it a C.
Okay.
It's a shame. I like the card. I wish it was in a different house.
If it was in a different house, it'd look much more tempting. Kind of surprising. Well, it's not.
Depending how themes go later.
Nice watch, right?
It feels like a Stark card to me.
Actually, that's fair. Yeah.
Depending how themes go, you might end up finding use for it later, too.
It seems like a good rush card.
Right. All right. One cost, non-loyal, Seen in the Flames. It is a R'hllor event. Play only if you control a R'hllor character. Challenge is action. Choose an opponent and look at his or her hand. Then choose and discard one card from that hand.
Hey, thank goodness it's at least a challenge is action. At least it's a challenge is action.
Well, and you have to control a R'hllor character already.
Yeah, but that's not
two
hard.
Limiters.
I want it.
Yeah, I want three of it.
Yeah.
Like in every Barra deck forever.
It's a really good card. And
as long as R'hllor is playable, this card is awesome.
So when they restrict Melisandre and Errata her, this is unplayable.
Assuming that whatever the other Melisandres they print are not R'hllor.
I mean, I don't think that makes this unplayable by any means.
Yeah, but I'm working. Well, three Melisandre in every Barra deck right now.
Yeah, and the way the game is right now with Wildfire and then before too terribly long, First Snow of Winter, like, if you can stick a Mel, like, you've got a R'hllor character for the rest of the game. Mm. Okay, she could be put to the sword, but, yeah.
That's basically it, right? Oh, Ice.
Dracarys. I mean, there's a few potential options.
But you know what helps stop at least two of those?
Using Seen in the Flames to rip it out of their hand first.
Yep. And then kneel somebody else.
Right.
I mean, it'll also stop Ice, because then you've knelt the guy that had Ice.
Yep. And it's not unique, so, like...
Well, it's an event, so...
Well, yeah, but... Or, sorry, I meant to say not loyal. So, like, that whole R'hllor package, basically, except for, what, Solace can be...
And Lightbringer.
Oh, and Lightbringer. Yeah, it can be run anywhere, so there are definitely some very strong options.
It's an A.
Yeah, I agree.
How can it not be?
All right.
That's Phyrethion. Feels weird for it to be such a control-y house here in second ed. It's still taking me a while to get used to it.
It should be your house, Will. It's basically Lannister in First Edition.
It is. It is. I will probably be bouncing back and forth between it and second ed Lannister.
For a good long while.
Yeah, second ed Lannister plays really well, too, so.
Well, you should have played Targon first ed, because that's what they play like.
Yeah. I mean, it's pretty great. Now I finally know what everyone was talking about.
So here's the slam dunk. Barra is a house.
I think the only house that's better is Lannister, and that's not a popular opinion. Everyone else thinks Barra is better.
They're neck and neck.
Yeah, I agree. They're right up there, so it's A. Props and slops?
Hey, I'm having a baby.
Jeez.
Well, that's big time.
Or if my wife is, and I'm with her, so
that's
we're
true.
Having
that
a baby.
That would have been bigger time.
Yeah. Man, although, wouldn't it be great for Aaron to be starring in a remake of classic 80s movie Junior?
Yeah, that would be the only thing I have in common with Arnold Schwarzenegger, so... yeah, but I'm really happy and excited. So definitely a prop despite Tommy's protest.
Congrats.
I'm not protesting at all. I am a happy father, and I congratulate you, sir.
Thank you.
Way to be. I guess I'm going to follow that up.
Oh, wait. Can I prop a student quickly?
Sure.
When a graduated student found out through, like, various texts being sent, this other kid in who finished my class last year, a senior, is like, can I show you a text? You can't be mad because it's totally not me that said this. You know the other guy. So I'm going to prop the student because his immediate response was, man, Glacier's pullout game is weak.
Oh.
That is good.
That was the bet. I couldn't stop laughing. I was like, yeah, I can't be mad at that. That's fantastic.
Ouch.
Sorry. Go ahead.
There you have it. I didn't have anything exciting. I was just going to kind of have a follow-up sort of revision to my mention of Star Wars Aftermath last week. Now that I'm about halfway through listening to the audiobook, I still really dig the sound effect and music and such. But yeah, the writing quality is starting to get to me. There's definitely a lot of verb tense writing issues and
it's weird, right?
Yeah, yeah. And it gets hard to follow some of the jumps in perspective and like flashbacks when you're just listening to it.
I can imagine that.
Yeah. And just the overall quality, the more I listen to it, the more I'm like, oh, you know, this should have been marketed at like a YA market. Like, hey, did you love the Hunger Games? Here, you'll love Star Wars too.
How did you like the interlude stuff?
That's actually what made me think of the Hunger Games. The first one with that, at least I assume it was an interlude. They haven't specifically like said interlude to intro anything. But I assume that the weird reporter talking to like Mon Mothma about the first
Absolutely.
Day of the Senate,
yep.
whatever it was. And that was what really made me feel like I was listening to the Hunger Games.
It certainly does have that feel. I agree with you.
It was really weird. I did not enjoy that at all.
I think it's probably better as written, but it's still not great. And I've obviously read more since the last time that we cast, and I've started to get a little more down on it than I was. It's definitely not top-tier writing, but it is what it is. It's still entertaining, I guess.
Okay. Yeah. Tommy, yeah. Prop our new game.
Oh, Prop Versus?
Yeah.
Versus is awesome. Super fun, Everyone. And guess what? You can actually buy it.
And it, Bingo. It comes with 3 core sets and has my new favorite idea for a Thrones agenda.
What's that?
What's that?
I told you, Will should know this, Tommy, you weren't here. But I like the idea of playing whatever card you want face down as a resource.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I gotcha.
Like, I think that would be an incredible agenda.
That would have to be... quite an agenda. That would be incredible. I don't know.
Especially with reserve. It's
yeah.
good.
Yeah. You just make everything limited and then you need a penalty, like lower reserve by 2.
Yeah. Or maybe draw only one card a turn or something.
No. Don't stop it. You're wrong.
Well, that's how most of those.
No, stop it. You're wrong. I will fight you.
Balance that type of thing. Or
I remember Noble Cause. Do not break my cool agenda idea with your shitty idea. No. But yeah, I love that Guardians are powerful.
The game in general, it's really entertaining. It's fun. It's a good change of pace from playing Thrones.
3 core sets for $40.
Yep.
I mean, it's a
great value.
To clarify for folks, it's one box that has a full play set of everything. You're not actually getting...
You can easily make multiple competitive decks out of it.
Yeah.
And if you like Firefly, Firefly's coming out for it.
Yeah, that's going to be weird. I would rather just keep it comic books, but...
I agree with Will on this. I would like it to be Marvel, DC, and stay there.
Yeah.
Once it becomes a competitive game, I don't care what the flavor is. I hate Stannis, but if Stannis is a good card, I'm playing Stannis, you know?
I get where you're coming from.
Jamie that shit up.
You're consistent.
There you go, then.
So, I guess the only other thing to throw out there is... Props to Thrones movie.
Slops to Thrones movie.
I don't know. It could be well done. Like, the Dunk and Egg prequel stories, I think, have kind of just the right heroic arc. Like the first one is essentially the same story as A Knight's Tale, and that movie is fantastic.
Or make it, really it something is a nice completely, show. Make it something completely unseen, where it's, you know, the Andals invasion.
Sure, that'd be fine, but, like, I don't trust people to do that, because...
Or the Knight's
This last season
story.
Sucked. George said he won't be involved.
Yeah, he won't be involved, but it will have motion picture budget, so there's that.
Yeah, I guess. I don't really care how pretty it is. I care how good it is. Can we slop George?
Why, for writing articles about potentially having a movie come out and
yeah,
not write
shut notes? Up and write the book. Also, he looked terrible at the Emmys. That dude is not finishing the series.
Maybe he was like a stunt double at the Emmys, and he was actually locked in the bunker writing.
Brilliant. Like, people need to stop inviting him places. I'm not even kidding. Like, do you want to see how the series ends?
Yeah, if you like Game of Thrones, do not talk to George R. R. Martin. Do not invite him.
Make him think Leave no one him likes alone. Him. Let's see what he does to the characters.
But at least the series and the universe, the genre, all of it is going to continue to go on in some media capacity.
Yeah. I mean, the way it's become this kind of pop culture icon, it doesn't surprise me to try to, you know, milk that for as long as possible.
Well, that's good. I mean, the more that it succeeds, the better it is for the longevity of the game and everything else. So,
yep.
Sorry, being invited to a wedding. Ignore that.
Well, hopefully it's not a red wedding.
Yeah.
Hopefully it is. I'm not in the groom's party. I want to prop, because I don't know what the hell made me think of it, but I want to prop the Harry Potter land at Universal in Orlando.
Oh.
And Islands of Adventure, because it's incredible. Like, if you like Harry Potter, you owe it to yourself to go.
Mm-hmm. Haven't been, but we'll go.
My Fantastic. Also, while you're down there, the Orlando Thrones meta is awesome, folks.
I've heard good
things. Hi, Tyler.
We'll look them up.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, I think that probably goes ahead and closes another chapter of the White Book.
Wait, I got a setup for Tommy. Ready? Going into the forest in Harry Potter is akin to going into the... Oh, fuck
what? Going into the forest in Harry Potter
is akin to going into the...
I got you, Tommy. Don't worry. Danger Zone.
Oh, I thought we were done with Danger Zone. I love it.
You know, Easter egg.
That's so good, Aaron.
It worked if you caught it.
I'm sorry, I totally just dropped
the
Danger
slowest
Zone
lob ever.
That is so awesome.
Paul does not begin to describe that one.
It's because we keep getting requests for it.
Yep.
Oh, everybody wants Danger Zone back?
Yeah.
Oh,
I think it's really
awesome.
One guy who talks a lot.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that's what it is.
Okay, so here's what it is, and you can leave it in the Easter eggs if you want to. Danger Zone will come back, but you never know when it's going to come back. It generally will be closing the chapter, but every once in a while we'll drop in a Danger Zone.
Yeah, just whenever.
Yep.